Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast.
Soundcheck is a series of live performances and interviews from newsounds.org, but times being what they are, we're not able to have live guests in our studio. Instead, here's a memorable session from our archives.
From the studios of WNYC New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer with Portland's own Pink Martini. Their founder, pianist Thomas Lauderdale, describes the band this way: "If the United Nations had a house band in 1962, we aspire to be that band." Well, it's a good thing we've got multiple cameras strewn around the WNYC studio today, because Pink Martini is a big band, and there will be sound coming from every corner of the room. They're going to begin with a song called Joli Garçon, Pretty Boy. Here, live on Soundcheck, is the band Pink Martini.
Combien de nuits sans sommeil, combien de jours sans soleil. Les jours sans amour, c'est fini. Tu souris et tu dis, viens-tu au pays des merveilles? Veux-tu balayer le passé? Joli garçon, je dis oui. Bras de béton, je dis oui. Cœur de bonbons, je dis oui. Seule vit l'amour ou vit l'envie. Oui, mon amour, cueillons les fruits.
Is Pink Martini live here in the Soundcheck studio in a song called Joli Garçon, which appears on the band's most recent album called Je Dis Oui, I Say Yes. Pink Martini is led, as always, by Thomas Lauderdale at our piano and featuring China Forbes on vocals. And heading around the room, we've got Phil Baker on bass, Dan Fonley on guitar, Nicholas Crosa on violin, the horns, Gavin Bondi on trumpet and Robert Taylor on trombone, Kyle Mustaine playing the English horn and Timothy Nishimoto on vocals and percussion, Brian Davis on congas and more percussion, Miguel Bernal playing bongos and percussion, and Reinhard Meltz behind our drum kit. That is Pink Martini as they currently stand. Thomas, good to have you with us
here
today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Let me ask you something. I mean, you started this band back in the early 90s.
Yeah, 1994.
And you were doing music for political fundraisers. Now, maybe this is a chicken and egg question, but the kind of international, cosmopolitan nature of the band, was that idea there first and that turned out to be the right venue for the band, or did the kind of shows you were doing drive the song selection?
I would say that we had the idea first, and I mean, the band started actually out of politics, really. I was back in Portland, Oregon after graduating from college, where I'd met China Forbes, and I thought that I was going to try to become mayor of Portland. And
seriously?
Yeah. Wow. But there was a very nasty attempt in 1994 to amend the Oregon Constitution to declare homosexuality illegal, along with bestiality and pedophilia and necrophilia.
And right, because those are all equivalent
always
things.
Sort of forever linked. and so I was working on the campaign in opposition to this, and I had just seen Pee Wee Herman's Christmas special.
Uh-huh. Oh, man, I can't wait to see where this story is going.
Which has every guest star imaginable, everybody from like Charo, Katie Lang, Grace Jones, Zsa Gabor, Dinah Shore, Oprah Winfrey, Whoopi Goldberg, Magic Johnson, Little Richard, and the Del Rubio triplets, three gals, three guitars, somewhere between the ages of 70 and 80, and they wore little mini skirts and booties, and they played guitar and warbled covers of Walk Like an Egyptian and Whip It. And so I brought them to town to do a series of small concerts in nursing homes and retirement homes and hospitals and rotary meetings. And then they would sort of say at the end of their set, please vote no on Measure 13. And at mm-hmm. the end of the week, we had a big concert at Cinema 21 for the community. And I couldn't get a hold of the surf band that I wanted to open, Satan's Pilgrims. So I threw on a cocktail dress and started Pink Martini. That's how it started. and so we became kind of the house band for politically progressive causes. We did a lot of benefits for cleaning up the Willamette River, affordable housing, mm-hmm, civil rights, mm-hmm. libraries, public broadcasting. And that's kind of what we did for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
When we released our first album, about a year into it, I didn't really get along with our first singer. And so I remembered sort of how fantastic China was, because I'd known her in college, mm-hmm. and she was queen of the dining hall.
I ate a lot.
And so I called her up and kind of somehow convinced her to come out to Portland, Oregon, and kept doing this every couple of weeks. And finally she moved there and we released our first album. And on that album, there was a French song, which we had written because China sort of insisted that we should write at least one or two songs to be credible or taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we found ourselves popular in France. So we went from Portland to France.
Yeah.
Actually, we played France probably 100 times before we ever came to even New York City.
Well, you know, one of the funny things about that story, and there were so many funny things about that story, is this idea of, I mean, we think of Portland as Portlandia now. You
right.
know? In 1994, was it a different place?
It was a different place. It was really podunk, and it was cheap, and it didn't really care.
But it cared if you were gay. It cared enough to.
Well,
have,
yeah, but it,
well, I mean, of course, that's a statewide thing.
That's a statewide thing. In Portland was really sort of like this. It was the cheapest of the major cities on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And Los Angeles is good only if you don't want anything. San Francisco is too beautiful to be believable, and Seattle was trying so hard to be cosmopolitan, and Portland was really sort of podunk and didn't care.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think that we've sort of suffered from the sort of Seattle disease in recent years. It's become more expensive. expensive. It has this sort of cosmopolitan aspirations, and it's a bit snooty. So the climate has changed a bit. I still love living in Portland, and I think we're all happy. Everybody bought houses there, mm-hmm. but it is definitely the vibe of it has become slightly different.
So China, for you coming into this band very early on and wanting to write your own songs, how has that, you know, it seems like there's a lot of songs drawn from around the world on this latest record, which is kind of par for the course for this band.
Yeah, it's sort of this new record is sort of a return to the first record when it was almost all covers, but from sort of obscure foreign films and right. songs in different languages. I mean, I came from New York to this band, so I was writing songs and playing in clubs and had a rock band here. And then when I went out there, it was super fun, and Portland was completely different back then and very neighborly, and everyone knows Thomas. So when he brought me there, I met everyone in town the first weekend I was there. But it's you know, I wanted to write songs, and Thomas was doing this, and so we kind of started writing a lot of songs together, and we did write in different languages, and we also kept doing songs from the past that Thomas had unearthed. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, this album is sort of like a return to the earliest album, the first album, Sympathique, in that there's more covers and sort of unusual songs in different languages again.
Yeah. China, you mentioned Sympathique. Mm. That's the song you're going to do next.
Yes.
Right?
This is the first song that Thomas and I ever wrote together. And it's the title song of our first album. And I was playing a melody on his piano, and he said, "That sounds French." And then he put this music in front of me by the composer Poulenc with lyrics in French that were really funny, and they fit kind of into our melody we were writing. So we used a couple of lines from that song and then wrote the rest of this tragic story of a woman who is just over everything and just wants to smoke.
All right, with a little assist from the French composer Francis Poulenc, here is Pink Martini with a live performance of Sympathique.
Ma chambre a la forme d'une cage. Le soleil passe son bras par la fenêtre. Les chasseurs à ma porte, comme les petits soldats qui veulent me prendre. Je ne veux pas travailler, je ne veux pas déjeuner, je veux seulement oublier, et puis je fume. Déjà j'ai connu le parfum de l'amour, un million de roses n'embaumerait pas autant. Maintenant une seule fleur dans mes entourages me rend malade. Je ne veux pas travailler, je ne veux pas déjeuner, je veux seulement oublier, et puis je fume. Je ne suis pas fière de ça, cette vie qui veut me tuer. C'est magnifique être sympathique, mais je ne le connais jamais. Je ne veux pas travailler, non, je ne veux pas déjeuner. Je veux seulement oublier, et puis je... Cette vie qui veut me tuer. C'est magnifique être sympathique, mais je ne le connais jamais. Je ne veux pas travailler, non, je ne veux pas déjeuner, je veux seulement oublier.
That is the band Pink Martini, live here in the Soundcheck studio. It's amazing how many songs were written, especially like in the middle of the 20th century, about smoking, you know?
Oh, and really?
Yeah, I mean, there's a pretty famous Greek song, Anapse no Tsigaro, about,
oh, wow.
You know?
How does that go?
You want me to sing it for you?
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
Oh, come on.
You have not plied me with nearly enough drinks for that to happen.
I have some throat coat tea over here, and it's going to make you go insane.
But, you know, that song, I don't want to work, I don't want to eat, I just want to forget and have a little smoke, you know?
Isn't that what we all want?
So that is Sympathique, and it is from the band Pink Martini. Thomas, guest singers have come and gone over the years with the band. How do you align the singer to the song?
It's sort of gut instinct. Having guests come in and out kind of keeps everybody, including me, on my toes, on mm-hmm. our toes.
Well, on the new record, you have Rufus Wainwright singing Blue Moon.
Yeah, it's an exquisite version of that.
Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. You knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me.
Did he come to you and say, I want to do Blue Moon?
No, or did actually, you? We recorded that. He appears on our album with the Von Trapps, the great grandchildren of Maria and Georg.
Mm-hmm. And the Sound of Music family, yeah.
And Get Happy. And during those sessions, he recorded a couple of extra songs. And at the time, I was going out with somebody who really loved that song, Blue Moon. And so I recorded it for Philip, actually.
Okay. And now that is a very scaled-down version of Pink Martini. It's
yeah.
essentially like a little jazz combo, as if in a nightclub.
Yeah.
Then you get to something like Love for Sale, which is really, I mean, Pink Martini is like a little orchestra. You have a percussion section, a pretty big one. You have a right. horn section. You have strings, etc. But Love for Sale sounds like a full-on symphonic orchestra.
Love, old love, new love, every love but true love, oh love, love for sale. Appetizing young love for sale. If you want to buy my wares, follow me and climb the stairs. Love, love for sale.
So the singer on that is my friend Kathleen Zadot, who is 75 years old. She's never been in the studio before.
Wow.
And I worked under her in City Hall in 1991 on the Civil Rights Ordinance for the City of Portland. And we became, I mean, she was really my mentor and somebody who I looked up to and taught me everything I know about sort of political organizing. And I discovered somehow along the way that she loved to sing, and so we would just get together and sing for fun. And then several years ago, I said, "Well, we should make a little album," and this is one of those songs that's on this album that she and I have been working on for years.
Yeah.
And I felt like the way that she sang it is so epic, and she's an epic person. We organized a Occupy rally in Portland in Pioneer Courthouse Square, she and I did, and so she's very, you know, we're friends really big, through politics, but also through music.
Yeah. So how hard is it for you to maintain a kind of dual role as a political activist and as the leader of a big music band? I mean, when you guys tour, is there political commentary, or is there, you know, something political at the merch table? How do you juggle that?
You know, so I go back and forth with all of that. Lately, in the last 6 months, I've thought to myself, well, our job is to sort of, because we have fans on the entire political spectrum.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, we were playing in Florida the week of the inauguration, and I looked out into the audience and I realized that there were a lot of Trump supporters in our audience. So the Zen part of me, or the sort of peacemaking, diplomatic part of me, says that what we have to do is find the commonalities and stress that, because mm-hmm. there's so much sort of discord and animosity and in the world already, and why contribute to that?
Right.
And we need to find our sort of, find the things that bind us together and begin from that place to have a conversation. You know, lately, I'm a little less that. My instincts are to sort of fight a bit more.
Kick that Zen part of you in the ass and get some work done, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just think that there's so many things that are happening that are really dismaying to me. Yeah. And we haven't really talked about it as an entire band, and I don't know that that's necessarily our role at this moment.
Yeah, yeah. But this is one of the things about this band that's so interesting, is you play a kind of music that, as you say, can appeal across the spectrum. It's kind of retro-looking music.
Right. It's old-fashioned sort of symphonic.
And here it is married to very forward-looking political thinking at times. So, you know, there's a kind of a neat, unexpected yin and yang.
Right, that's true.
To the band.
When we travel abroad, I think we think of ourselves often as musical diplomats. Mm-hmm. The best part of the band, I think, is that part which uplifts and inspires hope, mm-hmm. no matter where you are on the political spectrum.
And, you know, if someone is listening to your last record and is really enjoying one of the songs and only then finds out, wow, this song is from Iran, well, that's a great, to know that you can enjoy a song from a country that is kind of been demonized here
for many
years. Well, it's been great fun having all of you here with us in the studio today. And I have to say, it was all hands on deck for our engineering crew. Our tech director, Irene Trudell, is on vacation, but George Wellington, ably assisted by Chase Culpon and Edward Haber, I want to thank them for getting this all happening here. And thank you, Thomas, for bringing the band back
in.
Great
to
see you.
Thanks for having us. That
soundcheck session came from our archives. You can hear lots more and check out our newly produced remote sessions on our website, newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, our producer, Karen Havlick, and I'm John Schaefer. I'm